Brothers and sisters, let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 38. For the remainder of our two periods, we will spend most of our time based out of the 38th chapter of Ezekiel. And we'll work from there. What we want to try to demonstrate in the remainder of our study is that Ezekiel 38 is teaching us the same thing that Daniel chapter 2 taught us. In Ezekiel 38, we read, "And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him, and say, Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and I will turn thee back and put hooks in thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer and all his bands, the house of Togarma of the north quarters, and all his bands, and many people with thee. Be thou prepared, and prepare thyself for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. After many days thou shalt be visited, in the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste, but it is brought forth out of the nations, and they shall dwell safely, all of them. Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm. Thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands and many people with thee." In these first nine verses, we suggest to you, brethren, that we have a depiction of the standing of Nebuchadnezzar's image. Verse 10, "Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, It shall also come to pass that at the same time shall things come into thy mind, and thou shalt think an evil thought, and thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them, dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil and to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods, and that dwell in the midst of the land, Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish, with all the young lions thereof, shall say unto thee, Art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil? Brother Seth asked an interesting question in the break there. We took a moment to make note in Daniel chapter 7 that the head of gold of Nebuchadnezzar's image was described in Daniel 7 as a lion, first with eagle's wings and then without. Ezekiel 38, in showing us the course of human history and its political combatants at the time of the end, really is going to show us two great lions who are going to battle against each other: the lion of Nebuchadnezzar's image and the lions of Tarshish. And then, if we really want to be thorough about the subject, enter the lion of the tribe of Judah, a third, to rule over them all. As we go through Ezekiel 38, our goal will be to identify the peoples listed in the 38th chapter of Ezekiel and to give, as much as time allows, some things that are happening in the world today that we need to make note of. Let's talk first about Gog of the land of Magog. We have two references on the overhead now detailing the location of Magog. These are two historians, one Josephus and one Herodotus, that give us an indication of where the land of Magog is. On the map in the center, we have highlighted in yellow at the top the River Don, and at the bottom the River Danube. So in essence, we have the entire area of Central Europe in our focus at this moment. Josephus wrote that Magog founded those that from him were named Magogites, but who are called by the Greeks Scythians. Herodotus says concerning Scythia, since now we know that Magog is called Scythians by the Greeks, that the western border of the river Danube and the eastern border of the river Don is the territory of the Scythians. So we know then that Magog is what is known today as many of the Germanic peoples: Germany, Romania, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic. It's not Czechoslovakia anymore. I can't remember how they divided the two nations on that. But that general area of Central Europe. So we know that these people are going to have a great role. This is Gog of the land of Magog at the time of the end. Well, what do we see happening in Central Europe today out of these territories, particularly out of Germany, that deserves our interest? And the news is so, you can't go a day if you want to find something about Germany in this community today and that's significant. It's hard to go a day. There's lots of things that we could talk about. Germany is really the major player of the European Union. The constitution of the European Union is really founded after the German model of government. It is interesting that Germany will serve as the presidency of the European Union in 2007, a year that many Bible students think is a very significant year for Bible prophecy. 2007 will have been 40 years, a generation, if you will, from Jerusalem becoming one city under the Israelis' control. How interesting that Germany will serve as the EU president in 2007. Recently, and we're talking here about a great alliance between Gog and the chief prince, or that word is Rosh, we'll talk about that a little bit more, Germany and Russia. Recently, it's also interesting to note that Germany's foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, is set to suggest Russia's inclusion in the European Union next month. We're going to have more to say on Russia and Germany's relationship a little bit later. But it's also interesting to note that because of this announcement that has been leaked about the suggestion of Russia's inclusion into the European Union, that Finland, who is serving as the current EU president, has invited Putin to Finland on October 21st for a special European Union summit. There is an awful lot of interesting things happening with us today in Gog of the land of Magog. Pay attention to the increasing ties that are existing between Russia and these Central European countries and also the Western European countries that we will talk about in a moment. Along with Gog of the land of Magog, Ezekiel makes mention of the chief prince of Meshach. In the Hebrew, it is Rosh of Meshach. And in the Oxford edition of your Bibles, you will have in the note, I've written over mine. I don't know what it has in there. I've written Rosh. I was about ready to say you'll have written Rosh, but I wrote that in. I'm not sure what it says anymore. But this comes from the Hebrew word Rosh. Let's look at some historians and what they have to say about Rosh and Meshach. All right, as long as that keeps turning one at a time, I'm going to be happy. Look at the Encyclopedia Britannica, top left-hand corner of the slide. Concerning this phraseology in the King James of the chief prince, which we know is Rosh. The name Russia is certainly derived through Rosia, from the Slavonic Rus or Ross. So the Encyclopedia Britannica gives us the answer to who Rosh is of Ezekiel 38. It tells us it is Russia. Bochart in 1640 writes, "From Rosh and Meshech, that is, Rossi and Mosky, of whom Ezekiel speaks, descended the Russians and the Muscovites, nations of the greatest celebrity in European Scythia." Isn't that interesting how Bochart wrote that in 1640? Nations of the greatest celebrity. And brethren, look at what is taking place in these countries today. They are well favored. The days of Russia being viewed as the big black bear, the enemy of the West, have disappeared. That's a thing of our generation. The younger generation probably can't even remember the days of the Cold War. I'm in my mid-40s. Some of y'all might consider that the younger generation. But you know what I'm talking about. It's amazing the change that has just happened in the last 15 years. In the bottom left-hand corner of the slide, you'll see something taken from the Stryker Post publications. It's how the Soviet Union describes themselves in 1993. "The origins of both the Russian state and nation are founded in the area north of the Black Sea and in the steppe land to the north, and east of the strategic body of water. Soviet historians insist that the movements of the Slavs into the area took place many centuries ago. The name Russia comes from the word Rus, also Ross, and Rosh." So in effect, we have even the Soviet Union recognizing that the name Russia comes from this word Ross, this Hebrew word Ross. The Russian historians on the top right-hand corner list the same, as well as the rest of the definitions. Bochart in 1640 on the right makes mention of the same. Historians have done a good job for us, brethren, of letting us know that this Gogian host, this chief prince of Rosh, is indeed a Russian entity. When we talk of Meshach, Easton's Bible Dictionary tells us that once again we're dealing with the Scythian people, we're dealing with people of a Slavic background, we're dealing with people who live around the name of Moscow today. Meshach, the descendants of the Meshach people, have given their name to the city of Moscow, just as they did to Tubal. The descendants of Tubal have given their name to a city of Russia today. Thus, as you read through this slide on Easton's Bible Dictionary, you'll see that they have helped us to see the identity of Meshach is that of Moscow today. The importance of the nation of Russia today, as we've already said, is very important to Europe, as well as it is to the rest of the world. Let's talk about a few items that deserve our attention about the nation of Russia today. Just 15 short years ago, they were the big bad bully on the block, weren't they? The Cold War existed. And this might have, let's go back even a little bit more, let's go back to the 1980s, when we examine even our country's history. Probably the importance that Bible students might want to place on the legacy of Ronald Reagan is a man who enabled the fall of the Soviet Union through his politics, helped deliver that so that the stage of Bible prophecy might be set as it is today. We can see through him, at least, how Yahweh was using a man in his politics to help mold the nations, because now we have the territories of Rosh and Meshach and Togarma today that we didn't have when we had this big Soviet Union empire. Ezekiel describes these several countries, Gog of the land of Magog, Togarma, Magog. At one point in time, when we consider Togarma and Magog, some of those countries, they were all part of the Soviet Union. So a great thing has happened just in the last 20 years in that regard, in reference to what Ezekiel says. Today, Russia's critical ties with France and Germany over oil and natural gas are very important for us to make note of. Very important. France and Germany both depend heavily on Russia's natural gas. We'll make more note of that in a few moments. Russia now produces more oil than Saudi Arabia. Imagine that. Russia produces more oil than Saudi Arabia. They are really becoming an energy power. And some of the things that we're going to talk about a little bit later are really concerning to Russia. How is oil being moved through the region? She's very concerned about it because it affects her pocketbook. There are pipelines that are coming out of some of her former republics that are traveling through Turkey today that really worry her. And file that away. We'll get back to that in a few moments. There is even a planned pipeline, which we will make mention of in a few moments, that is planned to go all the way through the nation of Israel that concerns Russia. All of the Soviet era debt of Russia will be eliminated in the next few days. The rising oil prices have benefited Russia greatly. There was a time when Russia could not afford to pay its soldiers. Its military might was deteriorating. Its ships and armament were turning into rust heaps. Today, their gross, and I'm not a great economist, but their gross, the GPN, whatever that is, their debt is so low they are becoming an economic power. They are one of the least of the debtor nations. The U.S. wishes it had its Russia's limited debt. Very important to make note of. Today, Russia is preparing to build a Navy base in Tartus, Syria. How important will that be to Bible prophecy? We will certainly wait to see. But the fact that Russia is building a Navy base in Syria, moving into the area, is very important. We are all aware in the news over the last several months of the great controversy of Iran and its nuclear program. Russia has consistently stood up in opposition to any attempt to sanction Iran. And they're having an effect upon that. When Germany and France seem to be okay with what the United Nations wants to do, it's as if Russia does a little whisper in the ear and all of a sudden that's not good enough. Because the European Union has consistently not wanted harsh sanctions against Iran. They are continuously saying, let's have more diplomacy. Let's talk a little bit more here. Let's be careful. Russia's influence also in the Middle East is being felt in the current Hezbollah-Israeli war. Israel suffered some great casualties that it never expected when it lost many of its tanks. Israel assumed that its armament would be able to roll into southern Lebanon and suffer little opposition. But the anti-tank missiles that Hezbollah used, which they obtained from Syria, which were made in Russia, turned out to be very deadly. Let's talk a little bit more about Russia's energy position. Now, if any of you download the slides off the Ecclesial website tonight, OrlandoEcclesia.org, this slide's not in the presentation. I only added it in last night because I was having trouble finding this. This comes from the University of California's website. If you look at this particular slide, which details all of the known reserves of natural gas in the world as of January 1st, 2004, and I'm sure this has changed somewhat, Russia has 27.6% of all the Earth's natural gas reserves of what is known. It has made them a huge power broker. Who's next on the list? What country has the next most resources in natural gas? Well, that's Iran. 15.5% of natural gas resources. Let's put that in perspective on something that hits home with us. The United States has only 3.1% of the Earth's known natural gas resources. Now, we tend to think about how important oil is, and oil is very important to us. But natural gas is a tremendous resource. It is very important. When Gerhard Schroeder became chancellor over Germany, he was elected to that post on the promise to the Germans that he would scale back nuclear power and replace it with natural gas facilities. Yeah, I had trouble finding the word there for a second. And really, he made good on that promise. Germany hasn't eliminated all of their nuclear power plants. In fact, Chancellor Merkel, who is now noted as the most powerful woman in the world, even more powerful than our own Condoleezza Rice, says, you know, we might not get rid of all of our nuclear power plants. But it's very important that Chancellor Schroeder got elected on a promise to get rid of nuclear energy, and they converted a lot of their power plants to natural gas. Where do you think they got the natural gas from? Well, Gerhard Schroeder went to Putin and said, you know, I need a little bit of help here. Can we build a pipeline to Russia to get this natural gas to run our new power plants? And Putin said, yes, with conditions. And of course, those conditions were met. As a result of these things, Putin and Schroeder became fast friends. So close that they started going on holiday together. Whenever they would go on vacation, they went together, and they still do. Former Chancellor Schroeder is no longer the Chancellor of Germany. What do you think he's doing now? He heads up Russia's national oil company. What a great tie that exists between Germany and Russia today. France also was very quick to get in on the natural gas supplies with Russia as well. And they are also involved in establishing a pipeline project with Russia. In short, brothers and sisters, these names listed in Ezekiel 38 of Rosh and Meshach are becoming the energy brokers of Europe, even to the point that Europe is not satisfied to gain their oil from the unstable Middle Eastern countries, but is looking to Russia as well. Is not this confirmation to us of what Daniel saw in that image, Nebuchadnezzar's image? We see these territories binding themselves together. We see the importance of Russia and Europe today. What once were territories of bitter enemies and great fear are now made up of great friendships and great alliances. Keep note whenever you watch the news of what is happening between Europe and Russia. It is tremendous. And if Germany has her way and Russia is granted membership into the European Union, which I kind of think it'll happen, we'll have to wait and see. We will certainly get more confirmation of what Ezekiel saw. Well, what's the next territory that Ezekiel 38 details for us? We next come to the territory of Tubal. Tubal was a nomadic tribe nation associated with the Scythians. Along with Meshach, its name is preserved in the city later founded by its descendants, called today Tobolsky. Next, Ezekiel talks about Persia, which is easily identifiable today as Iran. And brothers and sisters, when we talk about current events, and I do want to qualify something here that I'm saying. When we talk about all these current events, I think we really do need to be careful when we look at current events and not get too hasty in our judgments. I think sometimes we get really excited and say, oh, I bet this is going to lead to this. Sometimes we have to wait and let things play out a little bit before we really see how Yahweh is working. But I really think we need to pay close attention to what is happening with the Iran controversy today on its nuclear program. How that will eventually play out, we cannot be completely sure. But one thing that we can be sure of, that whatever happens here and whatever compromises or non-compromises are reached, whatever the case may be, Ezekiel lists this country of Iran as being a great partner of France, of Germany, and of Russia's in the last days. So when we see France and Germany stand up to the European Union and go, well, we really don't know about these sanctions you want to impose on Iran. They're going to be counterproductive. Let's talk a little bit more. Is this something for us to pay attention to? Will it relate to Persia's role in the Gogian host? Well, certainly it will, but how that will end up, we don't know. But I would suggest this. I do believe that the end result of this current nuclear debate with Iran will end up with Iran being a cozy partner with Russia and Germany and France. Just like Russia was one day the fearful, feared enemy of Europe, Iran is destined to be viewed as a partner and not that feared enemy as well. Let's keep that in mind and pay attention and see how it all works out. Now, contrary to how Europe feels about Iran and the current problems, what do you think the Middle Eastern states are thinking? And particularly, what are the Gulf Arab states thinking? For those of you who received the milestones snippets, look back at the July 19th email snippet that came from Brother Don Pierce and read that. We think it's very interesting. The Gulf Arabic states, particularly those of Saudi Arabia, those who are going to be described in a moment as we go through as Sheba and Dedan, they view Iran as the next future adversary of the Middle East. And indeed, we do think that is correct. Let's continue and talk about the next nation mentioned. Well, it's actually not the next nation mentioned. I'm kind of taking these in the order I want to take them. We had Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya, but I want to talk about Libya for just a quick moment first. Libya, the Libyans were descendants who migrated into Africa. We may know it today as the country of Libya. And isn't it interesting, brethren, and this has gone by quietly, a nation who was hated by the West for such terror acts as the bombing of the Lockerbie, Scotland incident of that plane, is now, they're just not in the news anymore as a terrorist nation. Yes, Colin Powell did list them as one, but Muammar Gaddafi has taken great steps, has he not, to be taken off that list? He's repented. You know, let's look at Europe's attitude towards them today. Oh, yeah, they were troubled, but they've repented. We need to forgive them. They're in the fold. They're one of us. And indeed, they are quickly becoming one of them. Look back at verse 5 of Ezekiel 38, and let's talk about the next territory. Ethiopia. All right. Brethren, we want to suggest to you that the Ethiopia that we need to be concerned about when we discuss Ezekiel's great host is known today as the nation of Iraq. We're going to display in a few moments a quote from Eureka and Brother Thomason's dealing with the role of Iraq or Kushistan. But let's try to do a little bit better to identify this nation. This particular map is one that was drawn in the 19th century. And on this map, when you look at the Persian Gulf, we see here the rivers Tigris and Euphrates. And notice, if hopefully you can read that, what nation does this map list that as? Kushistan. The Hebrew word for Ethiopia in the King James Version, or whatever version you're using, is the Hebrew word Cush. And when we examine the Bible, we really do have choices as to who we're speaking about with Cush. The descendants of Cush did begin in this area that is known today as Iraq. They did, without question, migrate into an African geography as well. But brothers and sisters, I suggest to you that the ancient territory of Cush is what Ezekiel has in mind, as opposed, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, as opposed to that mighty military Ethiopian power of Africa. Now, that's not to say that if that's not what the Lord has in mind, He can't turn them into a power player in all of this. But we do believe and suggest that all of the conflict that has taken place since the beginning of the Iraq War has been very significant in molding this Kushistan into a nation that will soon be prepared to become part of the Gogian Confederacy. Let's look at the references we have on the overhead just to help us with this identity of Cush. Genesis chapter 2, verse 13, in describing the Garden of Eden and the rivers that flowed out of it, says, "And the name of the second river is Gihon. The same it is that compasseth the whole land of Ethiopia," of Cush. We know, brethren, from looking at these rivers that came forth out of Eden, that the Garden of Eden was originally located in the Fertile Crescent of Mesopotamia, or what currently is that territory today of that area between Kuwait and Iraq. And we see it mentioned here in Genesis chapter 2 that that is the territory of Ethiopia. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 10 and read verses 6 through 8. "And the sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. And the sons of Cush, Seba, and Havilah, Sabta, and Raamah, Sabteca, and the sons of Raamah, Sheba, and Dedan." And then look at verse 8. "And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth." Cush begat Nimrod. What city did Nimrod found? Babylon. So where was Cush? He was in that area as well. He was in that Fertile Crescent. So the man whose name was Cush is intimately associated with this territory that we know today as Iraq. And his descendant, Nimrod, founded a nation that would become known as Babylon. Verse 10 actually puts forth, and verse 11 actually, the King James says, "Out of that land he went forth," and some translations has here, "he went forth to found Asher," or Assyria. So he's greatly connected with these events. Let's turn over to the prophet Isaiah and look at Isaiah chapter 18. Brother Lou made mention of this particular reference in a exhortation given to us several weeks back. Isaiah 18 and verse 1. "Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Cush, Ethiopia." As Isaiah writes this, what land is he speaking to beyond the rivers, beyond the Tigris, the Euphrates rivers? He is speaking of a territory beyond what we know today as Iraq. And one more reference, because I do think it is related. Judges chapter 3 and verse 8 deals to us a man who was a king and might really help us on the identity of this particular place of Cush. Because in Judges 3:8, we are told of a man in that verse, look at it, who is the king of Mesopotamia. The king of Mesopotamia. It's been a long time since I've been out of school, but I know Mesopotamia is referring to this area that we know of as Iraq today. And what is this king's name? Cush and Rishathaim. His name is rooted in Cush. Now, let's realize that brethren who might choose to say that the Ethiopian is an African Ethiopian, that I'm not going to say let's totally cast that out of the wind, into the wind. But I do believe, brethren, that we have ample evidence that points to us that the Cush that we need to be examining as far as this Gogian host is the nation of Iraq today. When we consider those things, is it not important for us, brothers and sisters, to really note what is happening because of the Iraqi war? Europe is certainly not happy with how the war has been handled. They're worried about the Iraqi people. They feel they've been mistreated. And we would suggest that this attitude is a very important precursor to a future relationship that will exist between Iraq and Europe. Who has the greatest influence in Iraq today? Is it the United States? No, it's not. The largest influence of the Iraqi people today is the nation of Iran, who is heavily arming its militias and is poised to take over the nation. Whether a civil war will or will not come to pass in Iraq, whether or whether not we want to call what is taking place a civil war, we believe and suggest, brethren, that one of the things that we should look for is a resolution to this process that will continue the animosity towards the United States by Europe that has happened over all of these things, that will continue Iran's influence in Iraq. After all, in this Gogian host, we have listed together in that one verse, Persia, Kush, together, allies, geographically lumped together in its description, if you will, of the verse as well. We expect their influence will continue to grow. We expect or suggest to you that eventually the United States will be forced to abandon its mission in Iraq or to turn it over to another power, maybe the European Union, for instance. But that the end result will be an Ethiopia that is highly biased to be part of a European confederacy, of a Russian confederacy in the last days. So what have we witnessed over the last 3 years, brethren? We've witnessed a man, Saddam Hussein, kicked out of power, who was in no way disposed to form an alliance with Russia one day and with Europe together, maybe with Russia, but not Russia and Europe. He needed to be taken out of the way, and Yahweh has done so. And we are poised to see a great transformation in Iraq to a nation that will be favorable with Europe. A transformation, if you will, that the Soviet Union went through into what it's considered today in Russia. Brother Thomas, writing in Eureka, has this to say. Eureka, Volume 5, page 249. The reader must bear in mind that there are two separate and distinct regions known in Scripture by the name of Cush. The one in Asia, and now called Cushistan. Note the map that I showed for you. The other in Africa, styled Abyssinia and Ethiopia. And then on page 255 of Volume 5 of Eureka, and these page numbers are from the Logos edition. As the Gog of the land of Magog, the autocrat of nations, will be prepared to marshal under his banner the forces of Persia, Cushistan, Put, Gomer, and Togarma of the north quarters, in addition to those of his hereditary domain of all the Russias. Brother Thomas saw in his mind that what was being referred to was what we call Iraq today. We believe that the current events are bearing out for us that the correct Kush that we should be looking for is Iraq. And this is a very important point, brethren, because in the Christadelphian community, we have spent 15 years debating who Iraq is and what is their role in Bible prophecy. Ezekiel 38 teaches us that Iraq's role is to be part and parcel with the Gogian invaders and not separate. And brethren, I'm not going to try to cast stones at any individuals. It's not meant to be a hateful comment. But is it not a shame that we spent in portions of our community 15 years preaching to communities outside of Christadelphia that Iraq was going to be the latter-day Assyrian, that Saddam Hussein was the latter-day Assyrian, and they're probably laughing at us right now? Let's get firm in our mind what the role of Iraq is, and we will be better off for it. Let's take a quick reference to a few other of the territories mentioned with Ezekiel's host. Tagarma, which Decenius notes for us. Did I go backwards or too forward? Oh, I'm skipping a slide in my notes. All right, we got it. Let's go to Gomer then. Quickly, Gomer is listed as the progenitors of the Celtic peoples who settled large tracts of central and western Europe, particularly of France. We noted early how that Germany was increasingly dependent upon Russian oil and natural gas. France is as well. And I see where my time is, and I want to try to get to a certain point before we break for lunch, so I'm going to move a little bit quicker here than I intended. But just pay attention to France, how she's constantly aligning with Germany. She's following Germany's lead, which is in essence following Russia's lead. And they're economically tied together. They can't bite the hand that feeds them. You know, if relations between France and Russia sour, the lights turn out, where are we going to get our natural gas from? So it's a very critical alliance that has been developed. Tagarma, Jacinius demonstrates for us in this quote on the board that when we look at Tagarma, it's the proper name of the northern nation and country that sprung from Gomer, abounding in horses and mules. We should apparently understand Armenia as very abundant in horses. Such is the tradition of the Armenians themselves, who regard Torgum, the son of Gomer, as the founder of their nation, and they call themselves the House of Torgum, or as the Bible states, Tagarma. 15 years ago, or actually I should say maybe a little bit longer, this country did not exist. It was part of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union broke apart, this country came into existence. Very important in the scheme of Bible prophecy. Technology is wonderful. Sheba and Dedan. Brothers and sisters, we know these territories of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. Milestones of July 14th, Saudi King Abdullah was very critical of Syria and Assad and his rule in the Hezbollah-Israeli war. Yes, there was an attempt to kiss and make up publicly, but let's face the facts. We're dealing with the difference between Shiites and Sunni Muslims who have never liked each other. There's a good book that I read many years ago, From Beirut to Jerusalem, and I can't remember the author's name all of a sudden. He writes for the New York Times as well, and we see a lot of his editorials here, but he constantly put forth in there that when we think of the Arab mentality, it's me against my brother. It's me and my brother against my cousin. It's me and my brother and my cousin against my enemy. And that's we've got to keep that in mind as the Arab mentality. And we're seeing today a big transformation in Saudi Arabia where they are moving to the West. They are becoming an ally of the U.S. and Britain more and more every day. Egypt also, which I haven't got a slide on them, is continually developing into a country that is following the lead of the United States. Let's keep looking for this kind of rhetoric between people like King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia that is critical of his Arab neighbors, because we are seeing a rift and a division. A rift and a division that Ezekiel tells us, because Ezekiel tells us where Sheba and Dedan is. Which side of the fence are they on in the last days? They stand up with the merchants of Tarshish and they say to Gog, "Art thou come to take a spoil?" Maybe it's going to be important for us as the months continue to see that one of the big important things that have risen out of the recent Hezbollah-Israeli conflict was to increase the rift that is developing between the Saudi Arabian Arabs and the Middle Eastern Arabs of Syria, Iraq, and Iran. They are becoming a Western power. Ezekiel also lists as a power that is opposed to the Gogian regime as Tarshish, the lion power of Tarshish. On the slide, on the board, we have noted that Britannia means the land of ten. Now, I put that on there because let's look. Hopefully, you're still in Ezekiel. Let's go to Ezekiel 27. All right, Ezekiel 27. And let's read verses 12 and 13 there for just a moment, because we want to see something about Tarshish that is very interesting here. Ezekiel says, "Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kind of riches." And look at the riches of Tarshish: silver, iron, tin, and lead. They traded in thy fairs. We're going to stop just there for a moment, just for the sake of time. But notice how Tarshish is associated with these great metals. Isn't it interesting that Britannia is the land of tin? We see Tarshish as representative of that great merchant power of the last days. It migrated through the Mediterranean to Gibraltar. And today, the great Mediterranean power exists in the form of Britannia and all of its young lions. Let's just look at another World War I era poster that I have here on the Lions of Tarshish. Maybe a few of you were able to remember old posters of these. I don't think any of us would actually remember actually seeing these posters in World War I. But look at Uncle Sam up here in the right-hand corner. And for you younger people, you don't know who Uncle Sam is. All right, some of us are used to seeing this figure of Uncle Sam who represents the United States. And he's telling, "We need you. Your country needs you. This man is your friend, the Canadian, the Englishman, the Australian." And all together, they make up the power of the young lions. Brothers and sisters, and we're going to try to get to a stopping point for lunch here. This is also another poster that I had gotten that came from World War I as well. The Empire Needs Men, in reference to Ezekiel 38. We have seen a great reorientation. Ah, there's another new word. Another great I still can't say it. Things are changing in Europe. Let's just go back 15 years ago. Where were the majority of British and United troops based? They were in Europe. Think of all the bases that the United States has throughout Europe. And they're still there, but there's a great reorientation taking place. Our troops are moving out of Europe. They're moving in to the Middle East territory. And in the process, Russia becomes more dominant in a territory we are vacating. This was, I think, shown one time in Time magazine. I scanned this out of the Bible magazine. Look at all the United States and British bases that we now have within the territory of Sheba and Dedan, the area that stands up with Tarshish to oppose the Gogian invader. The world is watching the Middle East, brethren. What Ezekiel saw is on the verge of taking place. Now, we say on the verge. Is that tomorrow? Is that next year? Is that 5 years? Is that 10 years? In the scheme of Yahweh's time frame, we're on the verge. How long it actually takes us in years to get there, we do not know. But when we look at what are taking place in the current events of this time, and I mentioned several weeks ago to one of the sisters in the meeting that I know that Christadelphians were excited in 1967 during the Six-Day War. I know they were excited in 1947 at the establishment of Israel. I suggest to you of my generation and younger, we should be equally as excited and exhorted by what we are seeing today. The events that are taking place are marvelous in how they are working out Yahweh's plan. Because our love for Israel takes us to a love of the Israel that is to become, not the Israel that is. And we should see how that is quickly coming to pass for us. So the nations of Ezekiel 38 have been laid in place for us. And I know some brethren have asked me for this particular chart before. I took it from AdelphusWeb.com. It's on the internet site that Brother Mike gave you tonight. I borrowed it from others, and let's keep using it. This chart, I think, is so important because it details for us. Let's look at this. We have the Tarshish powers in purple. And then we have all the nations incorporated in Nebuchadnezzar's image, the Gogian Confederacy represented, and they are standing up against those Tarshish powers. And we will see them briefly, hopefully we won't actually see it. We will be in Sinai. They will briefly fight it out before it comes time for the real lion power to stand up, the lion of the tribe of Judah. Let's break for lunch at this particular point in time. Brother Ed Davis, will you offer a prayer for the food, please?